Welcome to Puentes a la Comunidad, Bridges to the Community. Hello, I'm your host, Emily Guerra. My guests on this edition are Judith Sheese Avila, co-author of Code Talker, and the oldest grandson of Chester Ness, Latham Ness, to talk to us about a well-kept secret of World War II. Thank you for joining me on Puentes.
Yes, thank you for having us.
Great to be here. Thank you, Emily.
You're welcome. So this was the first and only memoir by one of the original Navajo code talkers of World War II, Chester Ness. Judith, tell me about the code talkers and how you first learned about it and what was your passion to write the book?
I first learned about the code talkers when I moved out here from the East Coast. I've been here most of my life in Albuquerque area. And my parents had always made sure we kids knew that we were part Native American and a tribe from back east called Abnaki. And so I was interested in Native Americans, and I was fascinated when I heard of the story of the Code Talkers. And when a friend of a friend met Chester and said he could give me his phone number, I was all over it. I got to meet Chester, and it was great. And he had such wonderful stories to tell that I felt like I had to tell them. And I said to him, Chester, you know, if we don't tell this story together, then it will be lost. There are history books that mention the Code Talkers, but this story of you guys in the trenches is something that we need to preserve. Would you consider letting me tell it? And he said he would.
And how old was he when you met him?
He was 87.
And this was in 2007?
2007.
He's passed away June 4th of 2014, born in January 23rd of 1921. Well, let's get to the beginning of the story, how Chester joined the Marines.
Well, the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor, and Chester was at a boarding school in Tuba City, Arizona, and Marine recruiters came to his boarding school, and they pulled all the young Navajo men together and said they were looking for 30 men for a top secret mission. And Chester and his roommate, Roy Begay, both decided to apply.
And Latham, you're the oldest grandson of Chester Ness. What do you remember your grandfather talking about the Marines?
When I was younger, I didn't really know too much about my grandfather, other than that he did serve in the war and, you know, that he had nightmares at night. So we didn't really know too much as kids growing up. But it wasn't until high school that, you know, I took an interest in knowing more about what he did, knowing that he did get some medals and he was recognized. It was declassified, I guess, in the 60s at some point. So when I was in high school, that's when I really wanted to find out exactly what he participated in.
Well, you talk about declassifying. So this was top secret until 1968?
Right. It was. They didn't want anyone to talk about the code because it had been so successful. It was the only code in modern warfare, the only spoken code that never got broken. And they thought they might use it again.
Now, the code was, they used the Navajo language in order to make the code. Is that correct?
They did, but it wasn't just speaking Navajo. It was an actual code based on Navajo and English words. They only spoke the Navajo, but the English meanings were behind the Navajo. So it was fairly complex, and it worked beautifully. Even other Navajos could not decipher it unless they were code talkers.
And so Chester Ness was one of the original 29 Navajo code talkers for the U.S. Marines?
Yes, he was. And those men were really important because first, they volunteered for this top secret mission, even though they weren't allowed to vote in New Mexico where they grew up, or in Arizona where many of them grew up. But second, they were important because they actually designed this code. 29 young Navajo men with three more Navajo Marines who had more experience with the artillery and so on. So they needed a couple more Navajo Marines to help out.
So did they actually go through Marine basic training?
Oh, yes, they did, and they were stars. They had all grown up on the reservation herding sheep, so they'd had plenty of exercise from about the age of five, maybe walking 15 miles a day. And they were in great shape, and they did beautifully in Marine basic training.
How did the other Marines accept the Navajo Code Talkers?
I always get asked that because people assume they would have been prejudiced against them. But, you know, Chester said he experienced no prejudice from the other Marines. He said, what a Marine cares about is, are you a good Marine? And he said, we Navajos were damn good Marines, and they liked us and appreciated it.
So were they kept isolated from other Marines? Were they in a protected area as they developed the secret military language?
As they developed the language, they were in a locked-up classroom. But when they took the language to war to prove it was going to work, they were right out front with the artillery, just behind the artillery.
And how did the code work?
How successful was the code? Oh, it was tremendously successful. We had had pretty much every transmission that was made prior to the code intercepted and figured out by the Japanese. They always knew what we were doing, and it was terrible. We were actually losing the war in the Pacific. After they started to utilize the Navajo code, nothing got translated. They intercepted still, but they couldn't figure out what was going on. No one could. And the Navajo code talkers really helped to turn the tide of the war.
Are there any common misconceptions about the Navajo code talkers that maybe you'd like to correct?
Well, one common misconception is that they merely spoke their Navajo language. And that wasn't it at all. If it had been, then any Navajo would have understood what they were saying, and the Japanese could have captured a Navajo. Many Navajos were Marines and had everything translated. But the code was a real code, and they used, for instance, the letter A. They chose the word ant in English, but chose to translate it to Navajo, which is Wolachi. So Wolachi was ant. So there was no connection between the word Wolachi and ant unless you knew to go through English to get there. It's pretty clever.
You mentioned there were over 420 code talkers.
Yes.
Now, not just Navajo, but other?
Well, these were all Navajos, the 420. There were 33 tribes that have been recognized for being code talkers in both World War I and World War II. But there were 420 of the Navajo code talkers in World War II.
Latham, you first found out about the code talkers, as you said, you were got interested in high school, and then when your grandfather started to receive recognition.
Yeah, that was the best part of the time that I had with him. Like I said, when I was younger, he was a great babysitter, you know, that he was always around, and whenever my parents needed a babysitter, my grandfather always stepped in when he wasn't back on the res helping his sister with the sheep in Chetlata out there by Grants and Zuni. But it was quite amazing on how many requests we got to go and have, you know, book talks. He was, you know, awarded the key to several cities. I've lost count after, I don't know, a dozen or so. We were going on trips almost every week. We would try to plan as many as we could, you know, considering that he was in a wheelchair. And that was one of the biggest reasons why I traveled with them, is because they needed me to get him on and off the airplanes and just to deal with the wheelchair aspect of it and being able to carry him and stuff like that and tend to him. So that was my biggest role as far as, you know, helping him get around.
Do you also speak in the Navajo language?
No, actually I don't. I grew up in Albuquerque. Judy has mentioned, I don't know if she mentioned it before, but my grandfather retired from the VA hospital. He was one of the few that actually got a job after the war because they couldn't tell anybody what they did, you know, in the war. They had to keep it top secret, so they couldn't say that they helped save the country, which I'm sure would have helped them get a job, but that wasn't the situation. So he retired from the VA hospital, and my dad also grew up in Albuquerque, away from the reservation. So my dad also didn't learn the language because he grew up in the schools with, you know, the Spanish and the other populations, and so did I. So that's the sad thing now that's happening with our traditions and our language across the board through all Native tribes is, you know, we're being forced off of reservations because there's no work, and into the white mainstream society where our languages and our traditions aren't really taught or respected in most cases. So it's tough.
Now, you mentioned that your grandfather was one of very few who had a job after leaving the Marines.
Yes, yeah. He got a job at the VA hospital in Albuquerque, which is really cool because you can go there now and see some of his artwork. In the old cantina, which used to be the old chapel at the VA hospital, half of the building is a cantina where you have lunch and everything, and then the other half of it is a rec room. You go into the rec room part of it, and you look on the walls, and there's pillars. It used to be set up as a stage for church services. So if you look on the pillars, there's 12 yebiches, which are kachinas painted on the walls there that are about 12 feet tall.
So he was an artist. He painted.
Yes, that he was a great artist, actually. And the cool thing about that is when the book came out, it got his story out to so many people that he knew in the past. And we've actually found some people that had pieces of his artwork. An old drill instructor from when he went to boot camp sent a drawing that my grandfather did specifically for him in boot camp. So that was really cool to see, and it really blew us away on how talented he was at that age, you know. And then there was other ones where he went to school at Haskell after the war. He did some paintings that he entered into some contests, and somebody had saved it from being thrown away. They just thought it looked kind of cool, and they stumbled and read the book, and they matched the name Nez on the bottom. Sure enough, it was one of my grandfather's paintings that somebody saved from the garbage. So it's just really cool on how those things just come full circle. And there's a couple other instances where we received some of his artwork that, you know, he did throughout his years. So he's always painted, and he's always been an artist at heart. And I've always seen him carving or doodling. He always had something going on.
So he was a great inspiration to you as well.
I could say yes, definitely. One of my bigger inspirations for sure, because he could fix anything with duct tape. He always had an inner tube, you know, to fix things. You know, you're amazing what you can do with a strap, you know, of inner tube, you know. And he's just an amazing, resilient person. And I'm glad I took notice to that, and I apply it into my daily life now.
Mm, you're so very, very proud of your grandfather.
Yes, I am. Thank you.
Judith, as he was talking about, some of the men that came out of the Marines had a hard time getting jobs. Were they able to get any?
Well, some of the men did, but unfortunately, they weren't accepted in white society when they came out of the Marines the way they expected to be. They had done so well as Marines and were so well respected as Marines that they figured, we'll get out of here, we'll go home, we'll have jobs. And it didn't work that way. Unfortunately, there was a lot of prejudice at home, and many of the men died within a couple of years of the war from hunger, from exposure, from alcoholism, and from suicide.
That's very sad. And a lot of these stories are in the memoir, The Code Talker, and they can find the book at any local bookstore. It came out in 2011?
It did. It came out in 2011, and it's still at various bookstores, Barnes & Noble, pretty much any bookstore, Amazon, of course, and it's been doing very well. It was actually a bestseller, which surprised us. We didn't expect that, but it was a very nice surprise.
So how is the memoir Code Talker different from other books about the Navajo Code Talkers?
Well, there are some history books about the Navajo Code Talkers, but this book, Code Talker, is wonderful because you are with Chester and the other young men when they developed the code. You are with them when they were herding the sheep. You are with them when they're fighting on Guadalcanal. You're there.
And you can be there, too, with Code Talkers. I really appreciate you taking time to come out to Puentes, to KRWG, and talk to us about Latham, your grandfather, Judith, your book, Judith Sheets Avila, co-author of Code Talker, and Latham Nez, the oldest grandson of Chester Nez.
Yes. Thank you, Emily.
Thank you so much, Emily.
You're welcome. For KRWG, I'm Emily Guerra.